Chapter 5.
What should we do?
Haewon asked as she peered along the walkway.
Should we follow it? Are you balmy?
Becca hissed.
That's a ghost! And we're naked! And I'm like filled with Jason's baby batter!
I'm not convinced it's a ghost, I said as I started forward. And if it is a person, I'd like to know where he went.
Why?
Becca snapped. Just so we know, I replied. You can stay back with the sleeping bags if you want. I heard footsteps behind me and glanced over my shoulder to see naked Haewon on my tail, and a moment later, naked Becca tiptoed after us. The three of us crept along the battlements until we reached the far edge of the wall. The remains of an old staircase clung to the wall, but there was no way down, at least for us mortals, and nowhere else for us to go. He's gone, I noted as I looked around. Not a flicker of light anywhere.
I wonder what he wanted,
Haewon mused.
Can we get back to the tent now?
Becca asked.
I'm freezing my arse off out here, and I'd rather not be seen by the locals like this.
I nodded, but I was still trying to figure out where King John had gone. I was also certain that as scary as the figure had been, it wasn't the immortal spirit of the long-dead enemy of the Northern Barons. The technology that had made Tupac's remarkable return possible seemed a more likely answer. But that meant mirrors and cameras, and I couldn't see anything like that in the castle, at least not in the pitch blackness of night. With a sigh, I followed the girls back along the walkway. We moved more cautiously than we had when we set off after King John, and I realized how lucky we were that someone hadn't fallen over the edge. By the time we were back on the creaking planks of the tower, we were more than ready to return to our tent, and we ducked back inside without a second look along the old wall. Most of the heat had dissipated inside, but it was still warmer than the air outside. The three of us pulled on what clothes we had in the tent and buried ourselves beneath the sleeping bags. I closed my eyes, but I could still hear the wind in between the cracks in the stone and strange noises emanating from the grounds. At one point, I thought I saw something flicker outside the tent, but I refused to be drawn outside again. I was certain there was a human behind it all, and no amount of special effects would convince me otherwise. Unfortunately, the strange noises, cold air, and weird lights made it hard to sleep, even if I did believe in the magic of CGI rather than spirits. I half-dozed, but never really hit a deep sleep, and neither did the girls. The three of us shifted uncomfortably under the weight of the sleeping bags, and by morning we were more than ready to pack everything on the back of the bikes and continue toward Scampton.
What a strange night,
Becca sighed.
At least the ghost didn't come back,
Haewon replied.
I don't know why you wanted to follow it. It's not like we can catch it. But what if it wanted to tell us something? What, like, don't stay here?
Becca snickered. Well, it's morning and we're all still alive, so I vote we eat and then find the A1, I said. Let someone else figure out what King John has to say about life in the afterworld.
I agree,
Becca said as she stretched. I opened the flap and peered around the room, but it was still empty. A thin stream of sunlight left a bright patch on the wood, but everything else was still in shadow. John didn't return. So I stepped out of the tent, stretched my muscles, and then headed off to the bathroom, to be followed by a stop at the bikes. After cleaning up from the night before and finding some clothes that didn't smell too funky, I did another check of our ammunition bag. We'd refilled the rifles, which left a noticeable dent in our supply. I sighed and wondered what it would take to convince the head of RAF Scampton to provide us with another refill.
You sound unhappy,
Haewon noted, as she joined me by the bikes. Just wondering if we'll be able to fill this bag again, I said.
It will become difficult to do once we move further north,
Haewon mused.
I looked at the map, and there aren't any bases near Ravenscar.
We might have to look into making our own ammunition, I replied. Though where we would find the materials and equipment to do that is a mystery.
We will find a way. But Becca is already preparing the tea and coffee, and I was sent to retrieve some food for breakfast.
You two were done before me? I asked in surprise.
We can move quickly when we want to. Also, when the unheated bathroom feels like an icebox.
Well, I think it's just going to be more granola for breakfast.
We also have some instant oatmeal packets left from our aid at the camping store,
Haewon said as she picked through our supplies.
Maybe we can put the granola on top.
We gathered up the cups, oatmeal packets, and a couple of granola bars that were already smashed and returned to our camp. Becca had the stove going and a kettle of water was heating up, and a moment later it began to whistle. Hot water was poured into our cups while I emptied oatmeal into the bowls. Becca then added the hot water to the bowls while Haywan sprinkled crushed granola bits over the top. I stirred the mixture with my spoon and then took a careful bite. It was the usual gooey, pasty oatmeal that I remembered from my childhood, and a reminder of why I never ate it once I was on my own. Still, there was no telling how long it would be before we would be able to stop and eat again, and the oatmeal did fill me up better than just a plain granola bar. I forced myself to eat the rest of the glue-like substance, then I washed away the flavor with a cup of instant coffee. "Breakfast of champions," I teased when I was done.
"There's a thought,"
Becca said as she licked her spoon.
"Maybe we should grab some of those little boxes of dry cereal next time. And eat them without milk?"
"Some cereals are really good without milk. I like Lucky Charms on their own."
"Cocoa Puffs for me,"
Becca said. Haywan scrunched her nose in disapproval as she started to gather our gear. "Oh, come on," I said. "Everyone's eaten Cheerios without milk at some point in their life. Parents give it to their kids all the time."
"Not mine,"
Haywan insisted. The Korean stood up and carried our load of bowls and cups to the stairs. I gave a surprised look to the blonde, who shrugged at me before she followed Haywan. Alone in the tower, I looked around the space for a moment and then went to work on packing up the rest of our camp. When the tent was neatly packed and the sleeping bags folded, I wandered back out to the battlements where we'd seen the ghost the night before. I stopped in roughly the same spot he had and looked across the river, but there was nothing notable about the view. Uncertain what I was supposed to see, I turned my attention to the castle grounds and tried to find any signs of the electronic equipment that would have made the king's presence possible. I wandered to the far end of the wall again, but I didn't see any signs of the cameras or other equipment, not even a handheld mirror. I stood at the top of the crumbling stairs and peered into the room below. But it was little more than scarred rocks and a handful of pebbles. There were no inexplicable footprints in the dirt, and no signs anywhere of a heavy object being dragged across the floor.
"So, what were you up to?"
Becca asked when I finally returned to the tower. "Just looking for projectors or mirrors," I said. "But whoever set that up did a nice job of concealing everything."
"You don't think that was a ghost last night?"
Haywan asked. "I'm not sold on the idea," I hedged. Both girls tisked and shared a quick, disapproving look. I was a little surprised that they were both so willing to believe we had seen a ghost, especially Haywan, since she was our resident engineer and general tech wizard. But there seemed little point in challenging that assumption since we were ready to leave, as I gathered up the gear that needed to be stowed on the bikes. Truthfully, the more interesting mystery in my mind was why someone would go to all the trouble of creating the ghost. Clearly, someone wanted people to stay away from the ruins, but why? The obvious answer was that something was hidden on the grounds, but I couldn't figure out where. There wasn't much of the castle left, so whatever it was, it would have to be buried. That suggested the gardens that surrounded the castle, but then why not have old John patrol the hedges and mazes? These were the thoughts I entertained myself with as we packed up and prepared to leave. We double-checked the tower to make sure we hadn't forgotten something, then we took turns in the restrooms. It was probably the most leisurely departure we'd had in ages, but in truth, it only took minutes. Even after stopping to put on our armor and chest rigs, the sun was still little more than a pale yellow orb that hung low in the sky. I hoped that boded well for an early arrival in Scampton and wondered if we might even make it to the coast by the end of the day.
"People,"
Haywan warned as she pointed to the gate. I glanced up from checking my pack and saw that three people had indeed just run past the overturned barricades and stopped near the dino corpses. They looked confused for a moment, and then a sharp crackling sound came from the street behind them. Four more people spilled into the castle ruins and ran past the dead dinos without hesitation, and the first three arrivals sprinted after them. I noticed that each person carried a backpack, but no one appeared to be armed. "Trouble," I muttered as I grabbed the rifle. The girls responded by grabbing their own weapons. We moved toward the gate as the small group ran toward the stairs to the guard room. The cackling sound filtered in from the street again, and a moment later, three human-sized dinos appeared. The trio reminded me of the pterodactyl that had decided to roost on the university campus, and had the same long, narrow beaks, the bird-like head, and even a few scraggly feathers along their torsos. But their rear legs looked more like a velociraptor's, and the wings were far too small for flight. The dinos cackled as they took in the sight of the dead dinos from the day before, and then they started to move inside the forecourt. Their heads moved like a chicken's as they walked, and one of them even stopped for a moment to drop a jumbo-sized bit of bird shit. The giant birds spotted their prey climbing up the stairs and started to run toward the staircase. I had no idea if the dinos could climb the steps, or if the wood could even support their weight, and I had no interest in finding out. I lined up a shot before the lead bird had taken more than 2 steps, and the crack of the rifle echoed inside the walls like a cannon. My target barely had time to turn its head toward the sound before the bullet smashed into its chest. There was a splash of blood, a brief spasm, and then the dino flopped to the ground on its back. The other two started to go around, but the girls both took a shot then. One dino went down instantly as its head was crushed by the impact of the shot. But the final giant bird hissed and started to back up as blood dripped from a crease along its neck. I fired again, and the bullet hit the dino in the chest. This time, the blood spurt showered the cobblestones in red, and the giant bird spun in a half circle before sinking to the ground. I lifted its head for a moment, but even that was too much effort. A moment later, it took one more heaving breath, and then the dino went still.
Who are you?
A scared voice called from the guardroom. I looked up and spotted a 40-something man with a bad comb-over and a florid face at the top of the stairs. He frowned at me in disapproval and clutched the pack he carried close to his chest, as if he were afraid I would storm up the stairs and snatch it from him. It was a disconcerting way to be greeted by the person you'd just saved, and it took me a moment to answer his question.
I'm Jason, I said. We decided to stay here last night because it had gotten too dark to keep traveling.
You killed those other dinosaurs?
The man asked, as he looked toward the growing collection of corpses in the courtyard.
They chased us in here yesterday, I said.
Well, stop being a bother, Roger,
a woman's voice teased. An older woman with graying hair and a pristine tracksuit stepped to the top of the stairs and smiled at us.
We're glad you are here,
the woman said as she waved to us.
Even if it was under such wretched circumstances.
Where'd you get those rifles?
Roger demanded. From Brigadier Walston, I said, since it wasn't exactly a lie, and it gave us a veneer of proper authority. We're on a mission for him.
Are you military?
Roger pressed. Just civilians doing our part, I replied. The woman squeezed past Roger and started down the stairs, and soon the other 5 people started to follow her. Roger still looked unconvinced that we could be trusted, but he finally walked slowly down the steps and joined the rest of the locals.
We didn't know there was anybody still in town, I noted. We didn't see anybody yesterday when we drove in.
There are still people here and there,
the woman in the tracksuit said, as she held out her hand for me to shake.
I'm Betty, by the way, and these are some of my neighbors. We were on our way to the Stinky Pete. We've been gathering there with whatever food we can find. Fareed then cooks it all up and serves it to everyone who contributed. We found it's the only real way to still get a full meal. It sounds good,
Becca replied.
But I'm afraid all we've got are some old granola bars and oatmeal packets. Bring some along,
Betty encouraged.
You'll be amazed what Fareed can do.
We just ate, I said ruefully. And we do need to get on the road again.
We would have shaken hands and then turned our backs on Newark, but King John chose that moment to reappear. He was fainter in the sunlight, which made him more mysterious. Hey Wan spotted him first and tugged on my sleeve as she pointed toward the walkway. Everyone turned to look, and I saw 2 people making the sign of the cross. King John, for his part, paced along the battlement as if he were watching for someone. His body passed through a few bits of crumbled rock that were in his way, but his gaze never left the far side of the river. Eventually, he stopped and leaned forward through one of the crenellations, as if he'd seen something in the distance and was trying to get a better look. Whatever he saw didn't make him happy, apparently, and he suddenly whipped around and marched toward the far end of the wall. Just before he reached the corner tower, the shape vanished as a cold breeze blew in from the river.
"He's not happy we're here," someone muttered.
"He didn't even notice us,"
Betty declared.
"He was clearly going on about his own business."
"Everyone saw that, right?"
a short bald man asked.
"The ghost?"
We all saw it,
Roger snapped.
Though I have no idea if it was a ghost. Just looked like part of the show they do to me.
Oh, please.
Another woman huffed.
They didn't look like anything they've ever done for the show. That had to be King John.
What show? I asked.
Oh, something they've just started last year,
Betty replied as she continued to watch the battlement.
To bring in more tourists. Some sort of laser show that's supposed to bring the history of the castle to life, or some such nonsense. I haven't seen it myself, but I understand that it's supposed to include images of people like King John. I've seen it,
the huffing woman insisted.
They don't have anything like that.
We should leave, the bald man suggested. No need to antagonize a spirit.
It's not a spirit, Roger insisted.
Then what was it?
The huffing woman demanded.
Tell me that, mister. I believe in reality. Didn't believe those first reports of dinosaurs either, and yet what just chased us in here?
Roger looked as if he were winding up for a long-winded retort. But King John was back, and this time he peered down into the courtyard. Though his features were softened by the sunlight, the black pits for his eyes were weirdly prominent and somehow even scarier in the light of day. A heartbeat passed, and then I heard the distant sound of clanging metal and horses stamping their feet. I could have sworn I felt someone brush by me, and a burly voice demanded to speak with John. And then it was all gone. I felt weirdly disoriented for a moment, like I had somehow peeked through a rip in time, and I wasn't sure where I was supposed to be. The courtyard suddenly felt empty and cold without the horses and soldiers, and a sense of dread oozed from the castle walls.
Oi, that was King John,
Becca said quietly.
That it was,
the bald man agreed.
I can't believe you stayed here all night,
Betty said.
John's been a great deal more active since the dinosaurs reappeared. We figure it's only time before he's back for good.
Is that so? I mused as I looked up toward the top of the wall.
The Reed will be wondering where we are,
Betty said.
We should be getting on, and you should as well. You don't want to get on John's bad side.
It was perfectly timed, of course. As soon as Betty suggested that John wouldn't want us in the castle, weird little fairy lights began to pop up around the ruins, and something green and slimy began to ooze down one of the walls. A woman screamed, but it wasn't any of the women in our little group. A chunk of masonry crashed to the ground, and several dark figures appeared near the gate for a moment.
That's it, I'm leaving,
the bald man declared as he started to hustle across the courtyard. The rest of the locals followed him, even as a door slammed somewhere above us. I looked at my two companions, who were both wide-eyed at the sudden commotion. Let's follow them to Stinky Pete, I said, and see if we can't find out what's going on around here.
What's going on around here?
Becca asked in disbelief.
We can see what's going on,
Haywan added. We can see what someone wants us to see, I said, as I started after the small group. I'm more interested in what they're trying to hide from us.
Do you think John has a treasure he's protecting?
Becca snickered, though I could tell she was convinced the ghost was real. Well, someone's trying to protect something, I said.
What about Scampton?
Haywan asked. We won't take long, I said. We'll just go listen to the story of King John, and then we can get the bikes and head to Lincoln. You have to admit this is too good to pass up. Scooby-Doo was my favorite cartoon growing up, and there was always a dude protecting his treasure at the end. We passed under the arch of the great gate, and I looked back one more time. The lights winked out, the figures vanished, and even the noise faded. It was back to being the remains of a castle, with green slime dripping down one wall. Disney couldn't have done it any better, and that only piqued my interest even more.